This morning has been very exciting here at the cathedral. Our old city hall was demolished this morning in an enormous explosion, which took place at 8 o'clock. So as many of you know, I sent out an e-blast to all of you saying, maybe you should come later. If you want to come, make sure you get in the building before 8 o'clock. And here are some of the routes that you can get here because they blocked off a lot of the streets. Well, I thought it was going to be me, myself, and I celebrating the Eucharist at 8 o'clock. But no, there were a lot of people. And we decided, in fact, I learned a long time ago, liturgy can't compete with certain things. So we decided we would all sit and look out that picture window that's in the Cummings hallway. We had a great view of the building. And we watched. The whole floor shook in this place, and it was so loud, and the engineers were brilliant because the building fell into itself, which is, I guess, what they hoped to do. And then the dust cloud was tremendous. It feels like lots of things are imploding these days, including our government. Nothing's functioning right now. In the United States government, the way it works currently, if we can't decide on something, we shut down, which is counterintuitive, it seems to me, because if you can't get along, shouldn't you try to communicate more? It seems like all of us, no matter what our political leanings, need to learn how to communicate better. I was in Starbucks a couple days ago, and I ran into this guy who's always there, and he loves to talk. So I was sipping my coffee, and he was going on about Vietnam, how his number was so high that he didn't get drafted. But then he said, so I didn't have to go to Vietnam, but I did get married, and I don't know which one was worse, Vietnam or marriage. There was a quote that I read this week about marriage. It said, you don't get married to become happy. You get married to become conscious. You don't get married to become happy. You get married to become conscious. I think every one of us, whether our marriages have survived or not, can agree that the journey helped us learn about our own faults, helped us wake up to who we are, the good, the bad, and the ugly. This is the season of Epiphany, or the Epiphanies. An Epiphany is a showing. Every Sunday, we look at ways that Jesus showed himself to us, revealed himself to us. And today is the first of the epiphanies found in the Gospel of John. When Jesus turned water into wine at the wedding in Cana of Galilee, as Khalil just read to us. Now, if you put a Baptist and an Episcopalian together, they'll argue about wine. The Baptist will say, Jesus said, thou shalt not drink of the fruit of the vine until I come again. And the Episcopalian will say, Jesus turned water into wine, not grape juice. So some people have thought that this of the first Epiphanies has something to do with alcohol, but I really don't think that's the main message. No, I think this Epiphany has everything to do with communication and human relationships. You see, back in Jesus' day, a wedding lasted about a week. Isn't that amazing? They really knew how to party back then. What would happen is they'd set up a big tent and they'd slaughter some large animals. Then they'd have all this wine and you'd dance and eat and fall asleep and drink and dance and eat and fall asleep and drink. And all this went on until the wine ran out. But it had to go on for a few days to be the real deal. So Jesus is at this wedding with his mother and the disciples, and the wine runs out early. And that was bad. That was social suicide. That's a bad wedding. And it's Jesus' mother who pushes him to do this first miracle. Now, Jesus has a complicated relationship with his mother, depending on what gospel you're reading. In the first three gospels, we hear of Mary at the birth, and then we hear that she thought he had a demon and tried to bring him home. Obviously, he refused to come home, and that's the end of her. In the Gospel of John, however, Mary is more involved. She's here at the first miracle, and she's also present at the cross. And it's here that Mary is the one who says to Jesus, basically, "You're procrastinating. It's time to start being who you really are." Jesus wasn't going to do anything at this wedding when the wine ran out. He didn't think it was time yet. I can imagine his mother giving him the look that mothers give. All she says is, "They have no wine." And Jesus gets mad. He says, "Woman, what are you doing to me? It's not my time yet." We always think he sounds very rude, but actually, everyone called women by the title gine, woman, and that wasn't considered rude back then. But still, he was mad because she was pushing him. She must have given him another look because she doesn't say anything more to Jesus. She just turns to the steward and says, "Do whatever he tells you." Jesus, as the Son of God, walked this life to show us how to love God, to show us how to be fully human. He was human and divine. And one of the essential lessons I think he is teaching us here is that we as human beings need one another. Jesus would not have done this first sign were it not for his mother giving him a shove. You know, in the brilliant Russian novel Crime and Punishment by Dostoevsky, it is basically an epic saga of a man who becomes possessed by evil. And the very beginning of his possession lies in the fact that he is convinced he can be totally alone. He is convinced that he doesn't need help from anybody else, that he's to live his life and make all of his decisions all by himself. And the more he isolates himself, the more he becomes insane. Back in the 6th century, there was a holy man who taught us a lot about human relationships. And maybe one of the reasons why he had such great insight is because he was a twin. I have never seen a more intimate human relationship than that of twins. His name was Benedict, and his twin's name was Scholastica, his sister. Like many men who loved God, Benedict went off into a cave for a few years and tried to pray by himself, because that's what holy men did back then. But he realized that being alone was not adequate. He returned and founded the first monastic communities, and he created the Benedictine Way, which is many of our monastic communities today follow this model. And the model is based on a word that I believe all Americans need to recall. A word that we've rejected, but we need to understand it and return it into our consciousness. And this word is humility. Humility. Humility is based on the Latin word humus, the same root for human. Humility doesn't mean that you say, I'm a bad person, or I'm a jerk, or I can't do anything right. That's not it at all. Humility is the simple awareness that you're a human, and that humans, by our very nature, cannot walk this walk alone. God did not call you to follow Christ by yourself. God, who is Trinity, calls us to also be in relationship. Humility means listening to other people and believing that they have something to teach you. I believe that all human beings have a gap in our personalities. Some people have big gaps, some people have small gaps. We all have something that we need help with. But we are also incapable of seeing ourselves clearly. We cannot step out of our own skin and see ourselves as other people do, which is why it is essential for you to find people in your life who you trust, who are also believers, who will say to you, you're in a terrible mood and you're acting like a jerk. Or, you just did that beautifully. Or, I don't think you listened very well that time. You know, Jesus walked the earth with a group of disciples, and one of the best ways of finding these people that you need in order to become fully who God has called you to be is to find a small group. A group of people who can say to you the truth. We need that. And it's not because we're bad, and it's not because we're inadequate. It's because we're human. Look at Dr. Martin Luther King, who we'll remember tomorrow. What an incredible man. But he wouldn't have been who he was without his father, without Gandhi, who inspired him, and without the people who traveled with him and helped him and gave him feedback and courage. Human relationships are hard. And they're messy. But I think the hardest part is learning to accept that we don't have it all together. That we actually need other people. We particularly need the people who make us mad and the people who disagree with us. We learn the most from them, painful though it may be. Jesus listened to his mother. He needed her to get him going. And on the cross, as he was dying, he would look at her in the Gospel of John and point to his disciple John and say, "This is your son," to his mother, and say, "This is your mother," to his disciple. Because even as he was dying, he knew that his mother shouldn't live alone either, that she too needed someone to talk to, someone to look after her, to be honest with her, to tell her the truth. So let us meditate this week on this word, humility, and find the people who we can trust, who will tell us the truth about who we are. Amen.